You know, there's so much emphasis in this day and age on having multiple revenue streams. Mm-hmm. You hear that all the time. Mm-hmm. But one of the key things I heard, I can't remember who it was that I heard it from, but they were a very successful entrepreneur. They're like, how the fuck are you going to have multiple revenue streams when your first stream of revenue ain't streaming?
This is your captain speaking. It's time to take flight with Jada Davis. I'd like to welcome everyone on board. Get ready to navigate the journey of launching your next big idea. This flight is intended for the aspiring or thriving business owner, the person with a really good idea but not sure where to begin, and that person working on a job dreaming of the day that you can work for yourself. We are currently at a cruising altitude. The seatbelt light is turned off, and it's time for you to execute. What's up? What's up, everybody? It's your girl, Jada Davis, back with Take Flight with Jada Davis, where we navigate the journey of launching your next big idea with me and some of my business besties. So I had to go hometown with y'all, man. I got somebody for y'all. And I'm going to let him introduce himself, but who I have with me today is Michael Scott of Scott Squared Media. What's up, Mike? What's up,
man? Man, I can't call it. What's going on?
Mike's so cool, y'all. The whole thing's going to be cool as hell the whole time. My boyfriend will be chilling, cool as hell, man. But no, thank you again for joining us. I want to kick it off. So take flight. We are boarding the plane. We are prepared to go at a cruising altitude later on, but to kick it off, man, if money was no object and you could go anywhere tomorrow, where are you going?
Oh, I'm going back to Argentina ASAP.
Really?
Oh, my goodness, bro. So for people that have never thought about going to Argentina, like, one thing that you have to realize is that the U.S. dollar goes ridiculously farther. So I know that there's a lot of skepticism in terms of the power of the U.S. dollar right now, you know, with all of the stuff that's going on geopolitically. But in Argentina, let me explain or give you kind of like a baseline. So like if you go to Mexico, you know, it's like $1 peso to $20, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Or excuse me, like 20 pesos to $1, something like that. You know what I'm saying? Because we have tremendous buying power there. In Argentina, it fluctuates, but it's like relatively, it's crazy. Like you can get 380 pesos to $1 in Argentina. So like, yeah. Like excuse property, there, yes, property there is amazing, you know what I'm saying, in terms of trying to, like, if you want to live like, let's say if you want to live like you living in Manhattan, you know what I mean, in a nice, huge building, you know what I'm saying, like, this got stone structure to it, like, and a lot of their architecture is like Spanish/Italian, you know, that's the type of, you know, vibe that it gives, you know what I'm saying? And also kind of like a little bit of New York too, you know what I'm saying? It's all like this melting pot. It's very difficult to explain. You just got to go. That's where I would be going, you know what I'm saying?
I love it. I had a shirt that coincides with my travel brand, The Global Intent, that said you have to just see it for yourself. So I'm excited. It's on my list. Say less. Mm-hmm. I'll be there. I'm definitely going to Argentina. It wasn't necessarily something else at the top of my list. I kind of want to go everywhere, but it's definitely moving to the top for that alone. So I'm here for it.
Yeah, I will say, man, you know, you want to brush up on your Spanish a little bit. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I can do Spanish speaking countries. I'm pretty good with those. I can read it well and I can finesse speaking it well, you know. Mm-hmm. And definitely finesse them. Okay, noted. So we're getting settled into business class. So what are you drinking? And, you know, typically if you in business class, what would you be drinking and what's on your playlist?
Oh, this is interesting. business class, I drink a lot of water, bro. Water and juices and stuff. So like, okay, you know, I'm here for it. You know, when you look, I got my water right here, you know what I'm saying? But it's really more so because, like, if we are in business class, like, you want your cognitive functions to be working at full tilt, and your body requires water, requires other different nutritional properties, you know what I'm saying, for you to put into it so that your brain can operate the way that it's supposed to. So, you know, that's kind of my go-to. Now, you know, if we hit the mixer, you know, afterwards, you know, you might catch me with something different, you know what I mean? But
okay. And then what's on your playlist? What are you typically listening to?
Ooh, Project Pat. Man, 9 times out of 10, I'm listening to some old Pat. I'm listening to like Larry June, you know, some of the newer stuff. I'm trying to think. Oh, Primo Rice, which he samples a whole lot of old 3-6 Mafia and Project Pat. So, you know, so.
Okay, yeah, I like it.
Those are like my go-tos.
I love it. Okay, so you're in the media space, production space, and we're going to dive into that later, but what did you want to be when you were growing up?
Oh, man, it's going to throw people off right here. So I wanted to be a scientist growing up, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, exactly.
Really?
So that was like my first dream, you know what I'm saying? Okay. As a kid, like, I was phenomenal in science. Even when we was at Ridgeway, I took physics, you know what I'm saying? But like, my hero as a child was George Washington Carver. A lot of people know him as the person responsible for peanut butter, but he was actually responsible for so much more, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Learning how to revitalize soil, you know. Henry Ford often leaned on George Washington Carver for just his thought process. A lot of people don't know that they were like best friends, you know what I mean? Wow. But he thought that he was one of the most brilliant people that he had ever met. And, you know, that was like one of my idols as a child, you know what I'm saying? So I wanted to be a scientist, but the streets got a hold of me a little early, you know? So I ended up, I fell in love with music like 7th grade. And I never forget, I wrote the worst rap ever in the 7th grade. But, you know, it was just like, I had never been able to express myself creatively in that way. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like where things jumped off. And oddly enough, that's what also led me to what I do today in digital media.
Love that. That's dope. And I can tell that you probably, I'm going to make the assumption that you are really into history and understanding things, because just based off of your explanations of like the details of it. I love that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that a lot. So if you could be seated next to anybody on a plane, you seated next to somebody, we got a long flight. You're West Coast, I'm East Coast. So just say you come into the East Coast. Who's sitting next to you and what would you ask them, dead or alive?
If it's dead or alive, let's see, it would be Nelson Mandela. Mm. So he just, the spirit of perseverance that he had, that's what I would ask him about, is like, how did you in your darkest moments continue to just persevere for what you knew would end up being a brighter day, you know what I mean? Like, this is a person that was a political prisoner in his own country, you know, and ended up becoming the president, you know.
Yeah.
I'm years ago, when I think I was like 12, 13 years old, like, my mom, she took me to this event at the Peabody. Mm-hmm. I was like one of the only kids in there too, but Nelson Mandela was like the keynote speaker. It was for when he came to Memphis, and I think he got an NAACP award or something like that. Can't remember all of the specifics, but he walked up to me as he was walking to the stage. You know what I'm saying? They had just announced that he was, you know, coming to the stage. He walked to me because I was the only child in the building. He shook my hand. I didn't know who this man was. You know what I'm saying? And that was like one of the most impactful moments of my life. So I always carried it with me, but I didn't, as I learned who he was, you know, I was like, oh man, like that's somebody that I really wish I would have been able to have a conversation with, you know.
Yeah, man, that's dope. I wish that it was it was probably closer to today's time where we know like a picture would exist that you would have of that. But I'm glad you had that memory. That's dope. Like, yeah, that's one of a kind for sure. So Mike and I go back. We go back to high school. We go back to Ridgeway. So, I always think about Memphis, obviously, but I'm like, we go deeper than just the city of Memphis. It goes back to Ridgeway in high school. So I want to talk about just being from Memphis. Most people that I've lived away from Memphis for a long time, since high school, actually, have traveled the world, traveled the country, and I take Memphis everywhere I go. So I am the true definition of Harley home, but always repping. But tell me about, for you being from a city like Memphis, now living in LA, what did Memphis teach you about entrepreneurship and business?
It taught me several lessons, actually. The first thing it taught me is that you, like, everybody is gonna doubt you, you know, until you don't give them a reason to, you know. You have to talked about the spirit of perseverance. Like, Memphis teaches you perseverance in a way that I can't fully encapsulate, right? Because you're gonna always hit a roadblock, you're gonna always hit a setback. And it's really about how you respond to that. See me, you know what I'm saying? Like, I grew up, first half of my life, I grew up in Orange Mound. Second half of my life, I grew up in Raleigh. You know what I mean? And my perspective on life, like, I went from, you know, having a candy lady in the neighborhood to, you know, like, my parents, they were a little bit better off than most folks in Orange Mound, but like when we moved to Raleigh, it was a completely different world. Like, I went from being kind of like top dog in a neighborhood in terms of like having access to certain things, you know, to like hardly having anything, you know what I'm saying? And so that adjustment was like very odd for me. And you know, then having to go to school with, you know, majority, it was a lot of white kids, it was a lot for me to take in, you know what I'm saying? You know, it allowed me to get a little bit better of a worldview. I can see why they did that, you know what I'm saying? But I would say that Memphis overall just teaches you the power of perseverance, because nobody hustles harder than Memphis. Like, you might say Detroit, you know what I mean? But nobody hustles harder than Memphis. And like, one thing that I think also it taught me was that Memphis might be a little bit too small of a pond for me in terms of the way that I think, in terms of the way that I move. I might be a little too forward thinking for this city. And that's what ultimately led to me uprooting and heading elsewhere.
So did you immediately go to LA, or did you have any stops along the way when you left Memphis?
So after high school, I went to University of Memphis for like a year and a semester, and then I transferred to Middle Tennessee State University, and that is in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. So still in Tennessee, but it's like 30 minutes outside of Nashville for people who don't know, just geographically where it is. And that right there really expanded my world in a way that I, like, even though it's very much rural South, it was like it expanded my world for me to be able to see all of these different cultures that actually come to this school and expand our minds and our thought processes, right? But I moved back to Memphis just before I was supposed to graduate, because I got in trouble, you know what I'm saying? I was selling weed up in college. And ended up got locked. I got locked up, you know what I'm saying? Like, the semester before I was supposed to graduate. And so, you know, after I did, you know, the little time that I did, I ended up coming back to the city and like really just trying to find my way. Like, you know, I had a business venture that, you know, it was starting to succeed, but because I couldn't get the necessary support, and the internet wasn't what it is today, you know, it just all of those different factors kind of contributed to the lack of success that it ended up having. So, mm-hmm.
So with that business idea, what'd you learn from, I guess, the quote unquote failure, or it's not really succeeding? What'd you learn from it though?
I learned that I have to be much more organized. I have to also be very non-negotiable about, you know, just the amount of work that goes into it. And it also taught me that, you know, I need to work on building better systems.
Man, you're hitting all the things I wanted to talk about. So let's talk about Sky Square Media. Tell us about the services that you offer and the people that you serve.
So we are a full service creative agency. And so what that essentially means is we architect brands from conception to execution and getting your message to people. So, we came up with, you know, working with small businesses, but we've kind of moved away from that. Our goal now is focusing on clients that have substantially bigger pockets, you know. But
it sounds like big bag season to me. It's what it sounds like. I'm here for it. Okay.
Yeah, you know, it's
I'm here for it.
We're doing our thing now, but like we focused on now more so working with government, because we got our first government contract in December of last year, and working on our second government contract. And now we actually are finalizing some deals right now. And it's been a tremendous opportunity, but the learning curve to get there has been ridiculous. You know what I mean? If I would have known that we could have, you know, taken this route, you know, much earlier, you know, and figured out ways to build the relationships, you know, I would have definitely done this, you know, 3 years ago. But
yeah,
everything happens in the time that it's supposed to, right? Yeah. We had to go through the trenches in terms of, you know, learning how to run a business in order to be prepared to do business with the types of entities that we do business with now.
No, absolutely. So I was just actually having a conversation with someone recently about government contracts, RFPs, and things like that. So I'd love for you to dive deeper into that. Like, if somebody's just getting started, or what you would have wished someone would have told you, just a few tips as far as responding to them, things that you need to have in order, just whatever you want to, whatever gems you want to drop as it relates to doing business with government entities
for contract work. Yeah. So the first thing I would say is, what you really want to focus on is tightening up your past performance. So you're going to want to have something called a capability statement that really focuses on, it's like a one pager for your business. Think of it that way. It's like sending off a resume, but specifically for your business, not for you. And so it focuses on like all of the services specifically that you provide, and like your past performance in terms of like the clients that you've already had. Now, if you are starting from scratch and you don't have clients, that's what you really need to focus on, is getting your first few clients and using those people as case studies, you know what I'm saying, to show, okay, I do have competence in these specific areas. For us, it's video production. So we had to show, we know how to produce video content, in terms of mass communication campaigns and stuff like that. We know how to do this. We know how to run, you know, full end-to-end digital marketing campaigns. So, you know, we know how to do the media buying on these digital platforms. You know, we have air when it comes to these things. So, you know, that's where I believe you should start. And like, man, you, at the end of the day, business is not easy. So you're going to have to go through the trenches. You're going to have to do things in a specific way. However, you don't have to stay in those things. You know what I'm saying? So it's all about elevation. You know, you want to go from project to project and continue building on that and figure out ways that you can build a repeatable process. And then that's going to set you up for success when it comes time to do business with the government.
Yeah, definitely. Did you have to hire somebody to like write the proposals, or did you learn along the way to do them yourself?
Learned along the way. You know, I consume a lot of content from a platform called The Future. No E on the end of that. It's just F-U-T-U-R. Okay. But this is a guy that heads it up called Chris. His name is Chris Doe. But they have a lot of digital products, and one of which was a proposal template. It's very solid in terms of understanding the structure of a proposal, but I still ended up creating my own, you know what I mean? Because it didn't fit what I needed to the nines, you know what I mean? So, but I also, you know, took a look at other people's proposals as well and figured out, okay, how can I build this? But the key thing is when you see these RFPs, you know, or RSOQs, it's so many different ones. So like, let's break it down. RFP means request for a proposal. That means the government is actively seeking bidders on this project and just wants to see what your proposal is in terms of how you would deliver and execute, you know, this specific request. RSOQ is a request for a statement of qualifications. So this is more so like, you know, just showing like your past performance and like where you are today and how you can actualize something. So those are different. There's other ones as well, but I ain't gonna get into all of that.
Yeah, we ain't gotta get into all that.
But long story short, you know, the most important thing though is when you're looking at those RFPs or RSOQs, you want to literally take what it is that they're saying that they want, and you want to build that into your proposal, because it's something in terms of like negotiation is called mirroring. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like you want to make them understand that you understand what they're looking for.
Yes.
So
that's good. Yeah. And I think and for someone that's like, okay, Mike, I see where you are now. You're working with big government entities, you and your big bag season. So but take us back to before you got there, when you were first starting out, when you were a one man show. What were some things that you know, someone that's really trying to get their footing in this lane, what should they know starting out in business, specifically doing digital marketing, branding, things like that?
Well, I was lucky enough to have a partner. So, you know, my girl, she is my business partner. And I remember, so before we even established the business, like, we both were kind of like entrepreneurial driven, but had not moved on it. And so it was one summer. Matter of fact, it was for our anniversary. I think it was our first anniversary. I didn't want to go on vacation because I just felt like I ain't deserve one, you know. But she was like, no, nah, fuck that. We finna go somewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yes. She was like, this is a traveling relationship. You know what I'm saying?
I understand her.
But we went to Palm Springs. And so it's not far outside of LA, you know what I mean? But it was just somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I just remember that, you know, we were laying in bed in the afternoon. Like, I was just like, just really going through my thoughts. Because I wasn't in the greatest health at the time either. I was working a job that had made me sick. People are talking about this fungal thing that's going around now, like this candida. I had that in 2018. And so I was dealing with that while we were on vacation or whatever. So I was like super depressed. But I was just also just trying to focus on being in the moment and also just like having fun. But during that time, it was quiet time. We weren't on the phones or nothing like that. all of a sudden it struck me like a lightning rod. Oh, we should start a business in terms of digital media. Like, I don't know what it would be like. We need to do like a digital marketing company. Cause like this was before digital marketing became like super hot, like mm-hmm. it is now. You know what I mean? It was just like, it wasn't as over, what did it call? Oversaturated.
Yeah.
As it is now. So I was like, okay, like I immediately said something about it. And she was like, yo, that's a really good idea. We should do that. And my minor in college was electronic media management. So I already knew how to like write ads and stuff like that, but I never thought I would actually be using it, right? I went to school for music business. So it was like, I'm trying to do this music shit, you know? But like, I think the tipping point for me was I was trying to get my music placed in several different shows. And I was always just running up against not being able to like break through to the music supervisor. It wasn't that the music wasn't good enough. It was that I didn't have the proper connections in place to actually mm-hmm. make it happen. Mm-hmm. And so that's what kind of like motivated me to, I said, you know what, if I can't control, you know, how I can get my music into these different, you know, shows, the least I could do is do it myself and then yeah. just put my own music or some of my homies' music into it. I can just pay them a couple $100, you know what I'm saying? And pay myself a couple $100 every time I use the songs. And so it clicked for me, you know, while we were sitting in bed, I was like, yo, like, we need to do this. And that's kind of the start of it.
Wow. I love that. That's what's up. And I, you know, working with people, especially people that you're close with, that comes with another layer. So, you know, for me, I'm all about documentation beats conversation. That is my mantra of life. You know, my family members have signed NDAs for things that I've worked on. So I know that also, I have set the tone for my life. So people look side eye me, but they're like, all right, Jada, just give it to me. But I don't have to have conversations about it later. So let's talk about, I know people are listening and they're like, okay, you working with your girl. That sounds great, but I don't have nobody in my family that I want to work with. I don't fool with family. We see it on social media, right? I don't fool with family and friends. I don't do business with people. What would you say to that audience of like, that is, they are skeptical about working with someone that they know closely?
Yeah. Like I said, my case is a little bit different. I had always, prior to that, had to do it myself. So at the end of the day, if you show up for you every day, that is going to be the thing that draws people to you. Too many people spend time, you know, complaining about what they don't have when the main ingredient of what they need is actually themselves. And when you are operating in your passion and your purpose and you are saying no to several different things and really focusing on what it is that you need to focus on, people that are for you will be drawn to you. I cannot explain the law of attraction. I mean, there's documentaries and different other propaganda pieces out there about the law of attraction, but it works, bro. It works. Mm-hmm. Especially when you're not trying to force the vibe and you're just focusing on you. People respect it. Because yeah. it's peculiar in nature. So because like if you just decide like, all right, bro, like I just got to do it. And it's going to take some time, but you continuously build on what you've been doing every day and people see that you're committed to it. There are certain people that are just going to lend themselves as helpers to you.
Yeah.
And it's incumbent upon you to, at that point in time, know how to distinguish how to actually how to put those people in positions to help you succeed too, you know?
Yep. Nah, that's real. So you mentioned earlier non-negotiables in business. Are there any things that stand out to you that you use as like guardrails or as a measuring stick to decide like whether it's determining someone you will work with or a project you'll take on?
Oh yeah, like if I see somebody that like is always jumping from different thing to different thing, you know, just trying to find their stuff, that's not somebody I could work with. You know what I mean? Just being 100, you know, because like it's not going to work out in either of our favors, not just myself, but you have shiny object syndrome. You know what I'm saying? You can't like I remember I just had this conversation with one of my partners the other day, actually yesterday. You know, there's so much emphasis in this day and age on having multiple revenue streams. You hear that all the time. But one of the key things I heard, I can't remember who it was that I heard it from, but they were a very successful entrepreneur. They're like, how the fuck are you gonna have multiple revenue streams when your first stream of revenue ain't streaming? You know what I'm
Correct.
saying? You don't have the systems around it to support it and automate it. So how are you gonna diversify and try to, you know, have multiple revenue streams when the first one isn't all the way solid? You need to figure out how to lock that down first and get it
Yes.
automated, and then you move on to other stuff, right? And it took me a long time to realize that. It took me a long time to realize that.
As a person that definitely educates people on the importance of having multiple streams of income, the second thing I also say is, to your point, making sure that you have one that works. I think a lot of people, which is why I have this podcast, which is why I have business strategy clients, right? It's because a lot of people have great ideas. They don't know what to do with them. And then they also are scatterbrained. They got millions of tabs open in their head and they want to do everything at one time. And oftentimes people will ask me, like, well, how do you do everything? I'm like, well, first off, I did one thing, got that right. And I'm all about duplicating a process, finding something that works in a well-oiled machine and automating, like you said, to systems and tools. So what type of systems and tools that can be used in various different types of businesses, but particularly your industry that you use to run your business every day?
Okay. One of which is Dubsado.
Okay.
So this is not an official endorsement. Them niggas gonna have to pay me for this. But Dubsado is a tool. It's kind of like HoneyBook. It's a customer relationship manager. But it allows you to, you know, send out your contracts, send out your proposals, send out a bunch of different things. You know what I mean? And also, it allows you to see what types of action steps people are taking on your documents and stuff like that. You know, how many times they viewed it. You know, like I remember we sent something off to somebody and they viewed it like 18 times before they actually signed it. You know what I'm saying? But you know, it also allows you to process payments too. It also allows you to submit invoices, receipts. It allows you to do a bunch of different things. So like it's like kind of end all be all for a solopreneur that's starting out. That's kind of like one of the main tools I use. There's a couple of more that are more like Google Suite focused. So of course we have like our own like domain emails and stuff like that, but there are certain systems and automations that you can plug even into a Gmail, right? To organize everything that comes into it. You know, I can't really speak to that as much because she handled all of that.
Okay.
But you
Noted.
know.
I asked you after the fact. I'm like, tell me which one it is. No, I actually do a lot of automation. I learned about one that sits on top of email. So like if you have an assistant that is assigning emails to you, there's tools for that. So it's a lot of apps that can integrate, and it's a lot of ways that you can automate everything that you do, which is important to run the business. So like thinking about automation, let's talk about AI and automation. How do you plan to leverage it as it expands?
Well, when I'm doing post-production work, it already is something that is baked into some of the post-production tools, like Adobe Premiere has an AI function. It's not going to you know, sequence all of your stuff, obviously. That's not where it is yet. But what it does allow, like there are certain tools that you can use. Let's say if you're trying to like keep keep something superimposed on my face. Like we see the Megan Thee Stallion, Steve Harvey face thing.
Yes.
You know, that's a tool. That's an AI tool within masking, which is a technique that's used or whatever. But you can automate it and it'll like populate it onto what's called the keyframe timeline of a, of a clip. And if it's not synced up the way that you thought it would be, you can actually go back in and, you know, fine tune it a little bit.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
So that's one AI tool. Like for me, I use ChatGPT on a couple of different things. That's something that if you learn how to prompt the AI properly, it could be a significant tool for you.
This is a perfect segue for me to drop a plug that that's actually the lane I'm in now is being a prompt engineer. So I really mastered the input. Being a writer has helped that a lot as well. Just knowing, you know, what has to be put in order to get a good output. So that's the lane I'm like really chasing right now. And also like giving strategy to various different business owners on how to use it. Cause I know it's a tool that's going to require a lot of training for a lot of people for a while. My sister and I were talking about like a lot of the fear that people have around like new technology. And I always think about the fact that I was selling text marketing services like 10 years ago. I wish I was still getting paid because I still got artists and performers. Shout out to Type T. He's still using text marketing service that I sold him like 10 years ago for his music brand to communicate with his fans, man. I'm like, dang, I was so ahead of the curve. And people was like, I want text messages from businesses. Now look at us. Look at us now. Confirmations, everybody using it, right? Parties, promotions, everybody's using it. So yeah, I'm definitely trying to be forward thinking. So like having people on like you just to speak to different things has been super important. So thinking about LA, a lot of people go to LA for the LA dream. There's a lot of couch surfing. There's a lot of grind and hustle required to make it in LA. So like, how'd you do it? Like, what was when you first got there? Like, were you on the couches or did you go straight into an apartment? Let's talk about it. LA is expensive.
It is very expensive. I just happen to be very lucky.
Blessed. We talk about, come on, favor.
Yeah. So my mom's side of the family, even though my mom grew up in Memphis, like her side of the family grew up basically in San Diego and Los Angeles. My great uncle moved to Riverside County in 1959, I believe is the year that he moved out here. And so that's her uncle, right? He was in the military and then he went to UCR, which is UC Riverside. And so from there, he ended up, after he graduated, he ended up moving to Los Angeles and then had some stints in like, I believe Nigeria and a couple of other different places. But he came back to Los Angeles and he ended up becoming a city councilman in Los Angeles in the 70s and 80s.
Wow. Which is like,
yeah. So he was that dude. And his son, which is my cousin, he's a Superior Court judge here too. Arnold Schwarzenegger actually appointed him to his position. So okay. I just say that to say I got lucky because I was finna be couch surfing. You know, Lil Zach, my partner Lil Zach was out here. Of course, Coop was already out here too. So like, I had made arrangements because I didn't want to be a burden to nobody. I was just gonna be like myself. I was just gonna grind with my guys I had set it up to where I was just gonna stay on the couch, you know what I'm saying, and figure it out from there. My mama said, fuck that. She called my great uncle. Yeah, she called my great uncle and told him, hey, he getting ready to be out there like in a week or whatever. Is it okay if you kind of help him get on his feet out there? And I was like, hey, man, you ain't gotta do all of that. And my great uncle was like, man, yeah, as soon as just had her there. So I had my own room and everything when I first got here. I was like, oh man, Defoe had a house and everything. So I was
Living the life. Living the life.
I was like, cool. But you know, like, I ain't gonna like just wear out my welcome, you know what I'm saying? Like, I stayed for a few months. I think I ended up there for like 4 months and then got my own place. Me and my cousin lived together for a little bit. And then, it was a struggle when I moved out. Like, and my great uncle told me, he said, you know, you ain't got to move out, right? He was like, I'm more than happy to let you stay here. I was like, yeah, but, you know, I'm a grown man, man. I got to be a man out here, bro. You know,
that's respectable.
You know, I can't do that, you know.
So. Yeah.
Just want you to know it's tough out here. And he was not lying. Like, and this my first job, I worked in the trucking and logistics industry. So I was a trucker when I first moved out here. And I fell out the back of the semi-trailer. And a door that I was delivering, it was a sliding glass door, that giant fell on top of me. And I almost broke my ribs. So I wasn't able to work for like a year and a half.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, you know, ultimately I ended up having to make a decision because like I was on workers' comp, but the case was taking too long. And I almost decided to just come back home. You know what I'm saying? But I ain't do it. I ended up sticking it out. And, you know, I got another job. At that job, I ended up getting sick from inhaling like raw wheat or whatever. And like people may remember this. I had lost a crazy amount of weight. I went from like 240 to 174.
Wow.
Because I couldn't really eat anything that was processed at all. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I couldn't drink alcohol. I couldn't do anything that I normally would do, you know, just to have fun or relax. Like I had to go vegan for like 18 months. It was so crazy. Like dealing with all of that.
Yeah.
Is what ended up pushing me to the point of understanding, okay, I cannot rely on a job here. I need to focus on getting into a situation where I can provide for myself. And so that's what led me to start the company. And then one other thing happened, which was the pandemic. And I was working another job at the time for an employer that is pretty large, so I won't say anything. But I just felt very undervalued while I was there because, you know, dispatchers, they don't understand all of the nuances that go on, you know, in what you do. And then they also don't understand how trucks work, but they feel because they have a degree, they feel like they may be smarter or more intelligent than you. And it's like, bro, like I be figuring things out so fast, you know what I mean? I'm like, bro, I ended up having to tell one of my supervisors, like, bro, you're not smarter than me. So I need you to understand that we need to have that as a general foundation. You're not smarter than me. Like anything that is that you think you know, I can figure it out way faster than you.
Mm-hmm.
But I ended up starting to make more money outside of work than I was at the job. And I told him, I said, bro, I'm only here for the health insurance, my guy. Like, I just want you to understand, I'm only here for that.
Yes.
So I make way more money outside of this than I do coming to work. I need you to get that. And I ended up just having to leave the job because it wasn't worth it and went over into production full time.
Yeah.
There were some stumbling blocks along the way with that, but my path has been so crazy. Since I made that decision, I got into the union within 8 months of just being a PA. I got into one of the most difficult unions to get into in terms of labor in Hollywood, which is the Hollywood Teamsters. That right there ultimately changed the game. And now, like, I'm writing for an ad agency. I'm also, you know, producing my own work, like I said, with the government. So it's, I really need to make a movie or write a book or something like that.
Definitely. You definitely got to write a book. You know, there's a book inside of everybody. So definitely write it. Because in my book, I put, actually, the opening line is, if you know someone from Memphis, they may very well be the biggest hustler you know. And so you just kind of spoke to that, man. And I love what you have been doing. And I can't wait to see what you are doing next. I tend to stay away from asking people what's next because I try to stay present. And there's so much shit happening right now, right? Mm-hmm. And so many things that's already happening right now. But I do want to know from you, how do you want to be remembered?
Ooh. I want to be remembered as a person that made an impact. I just also want to be known as a person that really genuinely cared for people, not necessarily focused solely on profit. It was more so about impact more than anything for me. So that's how I want to be remembered.
I love that. So leave us with something, man. To before we get out of here, and you'll tell us where we can find you. But what would you say to the people listening that they got a good idea, they don't know where to begin, or I'm in business now, man, I'm trying to pivot. I know I need some marketing, some branding, some. I need a little bit of everything. Mike, what should I do? What you going to leave them with?
First thing first, you need to identify who it is that you want to serve and who you don't. Everybody ain't your customer. And that's okay. Everything ain't for everybody. Like, you don't date everybody, right? You know, you figure out what works for you and what doesn't work for you. You figure out what your red flags are. Those same things are unilateral principles. They go not just within relationships. They go, romantic relationships. They go across the board on every single relationship that you have, including the relationship with yourself. And so, you know, you have to identify what's for you quicker than later. And when you do that, things just end up happening. As long as you just continue to be diligent about the work that you do, it'll happen.
Yeah, I loved it. So I'll have all the details in the description, but tell us your website and social media.
Yeah, the website is scottsquaremedia.com. That's S-C-O-T-T squared, like the equation. So S-Q-U-A-R-E-D media. Yeah, I know how to spell that. .com. And in terms of social, I mean, you can follow me on Instagram at the.playapreneur, which is this right here.
I meant to ask you about this. What is the playapreneur? Where does it come from? Tell us. Please, let's end with that.
I remember talking to Coop, little brother, Tank, man. Shout out to Tank, man. We were in the crib one day, and we were just talking about, like, realizing who your music is for. And I say, man, see, I already know who my people is, man. My people is the playapreneurs, you know what I'm saying? And it immediately, bro, we was laughing so hard, but it immediately stuck. And I was like, okay, let me come up with a definition for who this person is. And essentially, it's a person that is entrepreneurial driven, but pursues it in a way that is unique to them, you know what I'm saying? In a charismatic way as well. So, you know, I put it this way in a rap, like I want to say, like, they ask me who your demographic. I tell them playapreneur. That's a nigga with some flavor. That's an entrepreneur. Basically, that's what it is.
I love it. Hey, I need to get a shirt, dog. Send me a medium. No, I love it. I will rock the shit out of that. I love it. Thank you so much. It's been great. It's been a good conversation. I learned a lot that I did not know about you. So I hope that everyone listening did as well. So like I said, if you are an aspiring or thriving entrepreneur, if you're someone that's working a job, you know, and you're thinking, man, I need to do something. I need something for me. This is a podcast for you. You see, I'm bringing the heat. I'm bringing my business besties along the way as we take flight with Jada Davis. Later. See y'all.